this edition of the Entrepreneurship Through Acquisition podcast, sponsored by the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. I'm Brian O'Connor, adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at Chicago Booth. And joining me today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Reid Tileston, CEO of Giddings Hawkins, a business he acquired a little over a year ago. And we're thrilled to have him on the show to talk about that acquisition and some of his experiences on the ETA journey. Reid, thank you so much for joining.
Oh, pleasure to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So, Reid, I'd like to open this episode with a little bit of an anecdote. I've gotten to know you over the years. You were one of my first TAs in the course that I teach at Booth, and we've been longtime friends now. Why don't you tell us about your morning routine? How did you start your day this morning?
So every morning I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I live in a high rise in Milwaukee. So to start the day off right, I climb up the stairs. I run up the stairs at the top of the high rise. It's 48 flights. It takes about 5 minutes. Gets me in the right frame of mind for the day. After that, I take a short cold shower, again, to get myself amped up and jazzed up. And then it's off to the office. Usually I get there around 4:45, 5 o'clock in the morning to see whatever adventures await for the day. And there is always an adventure that awaits me in what I'm currently doing.
Reid, as I think the listeners will come to learn over the course of our conversation, you are one of the most interesting people I know and truly a human specimen. So I appreciate you opening with that fun little anecdote. Tell us, Reid, a little bit about your business that you run. Giddings Hawkins, I would love to hear about how you found it, how you financed it, and some of the early days operating it. Could you just give us a brief introduction to the company and what you do and what some of your day-to-day now looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So Giddings Hawkins, it is industrial maintenance and commercial pumping. What does that really mean? We have basically five businesses in one. The first and biggest business is grease trap pumping. We have a fleet of trucks and we drive around Southeast Wisconsin and we pump grease traps. So we are the grease trap guys of Southeast Wisconsin. Secondly is we do other non-hazardous pumping, mainly catch basins. We have these big bad trucks drive around and we pump out catch basins. Third thing is we do kitchen hood cleaning and fan repair. Fourth is we do industrial maintenance, which means we do cleaning work and maintenance work around the big manufacturers in Milwaukee. And fifth and the most fun is the special projects division. And we can talk more about that later.
Reid, super interesting. How did you find your way into a business like this? You don't often think about a Booth MBA graduate going and finding their way into a commercial grease cleaning and pumping business. Tell us a little bit about the thesis and how you ended up finding this company.
Best laid plans. My background is in fitness and franchising. Before business school, I owned a chain of Anytime Fitness clubs in Northern California. And when I thought about doing my search, I wanted to align it. So in the case that I wasn't able to find a company to buy, that I could land somewhere that made sense. So I focused on fitness and franchising, knowing that I could build my network, you know, get a good job afterwards if I needed to. And I spent about 80% of my time focusing on the space that I knew. I also, though, spent 20% of my time going through other endeavors, one of which was, an addiction recovery center, which we can talk more a little bit about later, and then other opportunistic brokered deals as well. So I found this deal. It was a brokered deal through Generational Equity. And the way that I chose it is I was coming to Chicago for a wedding of all things. And I was going to meet with a business owner in Milwaukee. The morning of the meeting, the broker who insisted upon being there had a stroke. Nevertheless, I persisted because I had the owner's number. We went out to lunch at this awesome barbecue place in Milwaukee called Double B's. And it was actually during that meeting that I completely fell in love with this business. So I'd say that I found the business because of a stroke at a barbecue joint in Milwaukee.
That's so interesting. And I think it speaks to your persistence. One of the qualities that I love most about you. You mentioned an opportunity that arose during your search in the addiction recovery space, and specifically an addiction recovery facility. I know this, I know a little, just given our relationship, I know a little bit about this anecdote, but could we explore that opportunity a little bit, and specifically how you went about diligencing that particular acquisition?
So we were looking at buying an addiction recovery center in Northern California. I have no experience in the addiction recovery space. So I was looking at how I could get some on the ground experience in this space. And I really, you know, went back and forth on it a couple times for a couple weeks. And I reasoned the best way to do it was to actually be a part of an addiction recovery center or a sober living home. So I researched sober living homes in Chicago. And I reached out to one and said, I was just honest. I said, I'm looking at making an investment in this space and I want to understand more about it. You know, is it okay if I pay you guys and I live in the sober living home for a couple of weeks? And I live in the sober living home for 3 weeks in Greater Chicago. The best part of the story, though, is that I got engaged a few months ago on July, or I got engaged on July 4th, and I met my current fiance. We were dating while I was living in the sober living home. So I knew I found a winner, Brian, because she came and actually visited me at the sober living home during our courtship. I mean, what is that? What is a better example of true love? You tell me.
Reed, that is absolutely fantastic. I love that story, and it just shows your grit and resourcefulness. That is wonderful. Okay, knowing that about you and that you are your commitment really to getting boots on the ground experience and insight into a business before making an investment, what can you tell us about the diligence process at Giddings Hawkins?
The interesting part about the diligence process at Giddings Hawkins is that because of the nature of the work that we do, the business really, really runs 24/7. And the seller was very big on keeping the deal secret. So most of the meetings that I did at the business were on Sunday nights in Milwaukee, because that was the only time that I could actually be on site with the owner. Now, the business has a lot of heavy equipment to it, and I'm certainly not going to buy a business like this without having the equipment inspected. So we had a lot of interesting experiences on Sundays. I had to pay an outsourced mechanic on a Sunday night to come by, do a vehicle inspection, and inspect all the equipment to make sure it was good to go. So one of the interesting challenges I faced in being hands-on at Giddings Hawkins was how I could diligence a business that really operates all the time and keep it a secret for the owner.
Reed, I guess a little bit of a shift back to something we talked about earlier, which is sort of your MBA experience and how it might have prepared you for the work that you're doing now. I mean, you've done things like spend 3 weeks in an addiction recovery center to diligence that opportunity. You're now finding yourself getting inside underground tanks and cleaning them out. And what is it, Reed, about you and your experiences, whether it be the fitness centers or your MBA experience, that puts you into these positions?
My belief at the end of the day, which I apply to my leadership mentality, is that in order to really be an effective leader and effectively run a company or really effectively do anything in life, you really have to be on the ground and experience and take the experience in. As an example, we do a lot of dirty work at Giddings Hawkins, whether it be grease trap cleaning, whether it be industrial tank cleaning, and we do it at really odd times of the day and the night. So a month ago, for example, and I'm never going to ask one of my team members to do something that I would never myself do. So we were doing a tank cleaning job at a manufacturer 3 weeks ago, and it was the worst time. It was 5 p.m. on a Saturday night in the best time of the year to be in the Midwest in the summertime. So we had six guys out on the job, and I didn't tell anybody I was going to go. I actually went out and I met them at the job, and I cleaned with them for about 5 hours from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. The funny part about this story, though, is that no one knew that I was going to come out to this job, and three of the guys showed up late at the shop. So I'm there 15 minutes early at 4:45. By 5:50, I called the general manager. I'm like, hey, you know, Chuck, what's going on here? Did the job get canceled? He's like, no, those guys should be on the way. So they showed up an hour late. You can imagine how thrilled they were when they saw that I had been there hanging around for an hour, waiting for them. And then so I was there for 5 hours, getting my hands dirty, you know, really getting in there doing the work. But they were actually going to work until about 1 o'clock in the morning. This is a long job. Now, I had no problem staying till 1 o'clock in the morning. But what I was really curious about is what was going to happen after the owner, after the boss leaves, right? Because you know that when I'm there, everyone's going to be working hard. They're going to be on their best behavior, whole nine yards. But what I really judge their character on is what they do when I'm not looking. True test of integrity. What you do when you think no one's watching you. And I can tell you that some of the team members worked just as hard when I was gone. Others did not put the same effort when they thought I wasn't watching. So I believe in being hands-on and just, you know, going big in whatever you do. Go big or go home.
What do you do? You know, that's an interesting point you bring up, Reed. I mean, as a leader, now knowing that, what do you do? How do you maybe take responsibility for that as the leader, and what changes, you know, might need to be made, or how have you approached that exact notion that some of the crew, you know, did remain as productive and maybe others did not?
The key is that you reward the behavior that if they have good behavior, you have to reward it, right? If they have not the right behavior, you have to reward that as well. Because, you know, my belief is that human beings at the core are rational. So if someone works hard, they get extra compensation for it. They get verbal praise for it. And if they don't work hard, they're held accountable for it. And the same thing happens to me as well. I make a point that if I mess something up, whether it be a small thing or more impactful, that I own it. And what I like to do with the team members, which I think some of them enjoy and some of them are certainly not a big fan of, is whenever I see them, I ask them, hey, tell me one thing that you thought you did exceptionally well today, and tell me one thing that you're going to do differently next time. Never what did you do wrong today, but what are you going to do differently next time? And by the way, where I got that idea is from a one-time Booth professor, who's now, of course, at Kellogg, unfortunately, Craig Wortman, in his sales class that I took when I was at Booth. He's a big fan of, after a meeting, talking about one thing you did well, one thing you didn't do well, and then applying it next time. So that's one of the interesting things that I learned from the MBA experience that actually helps me in my day-to-day right now.
That's a fantastic lesson, and I'm not surprised that it came from such a fantastic person in Craig Wortman. The environment that we're operating in right now, Reed, is challenging to say the least, right? We're sort of amid a global pandemic in COVID-19, all sorts of complications, of course, to the delivery of service for especially a business that, you know, requires on-site presence and people, you know, sort of being together, performing jobs. How have you adjusted? Let's talk a little bit about the unique challenges associated with the environment in which you're operating and how it's impacted your business and the way you think about leading your team.
COVID-19 has provided an opportunity for me to show how much I value the safety of my team members. My number one priority is making sure that there's enough masks, making sure that we have gloves in the trucks, and making sure that my team members are safe. So in that regard, it provides, you know, an opportunity. And I always look, it's easier said than done, but I do my best to look for opportunities that exist in times of adversity. So in this case, you know, all the safety stuff that they need. I also offered all of my employees interest-free paycheck advances in case, you know, a spouse had lost a job or in case they had extra monetary pressures. So provide an opportunity to do the right thing. Two other positive things that came out of COVID-19 is that it actually slowed down our business a bit. We were growing at a nice clip before COVID-19. That growth is now slowed. But now the growth is slowed, I have more opportunities to improve operations. So as we speak, I'm in the process of going through a quote-unquote digital transformation, excuse the lingo from my Microsoft days, where we're going from being a paper-based business where the scheduling literally was done out of a red book for 30 years to now having field service management that's delivered through an app. And it would have been much more difficult, not that it's not difficult enough, it creates plenty of adventures in my day to launch it. But now that things have slowed down a bit, it's actually easier to make operational changes like that so that when things pick up again, hopefully we'll be more efficient. And the third opportunity that came out of it is that we launched, with the help of the Polsky Center, a Booth CEO operator group about a year ago. And the engagement had been pretty good. I'd give it about a 7 out of 10. So, you know, up until COVID-19, when COVID-19 hit, our Slack channel and our group just went crazy because all of us were confronting the same challenges. How do we deal with a remote workforce? If we have to lay people off, what regulations do we have to follow? How do we keep our team members safe? So it actually provided an opportunity for the operator group to really go from, you know, a good level to a much better level. So for me, I choose to take those three positive opportunities out of COVID-19.
Yeah, Reid, it's wonderful. I mean, when life hands you lemons, you tend to make lemonade. And that's just a fantastic quality of yours. I love that. Speaking of life handing you lemons, I'd like to talk about risks and things you identified during diligence that can be issues if they were to come to fruition during your ownership of the business, right? I don't know that any of us could have accurately anticipated that the environment that we're operating in now would have happened. But let's talk about maybe a risk or two that you identified in your diligence effort of Giddings Hawkins.
First and foremost, I got to say that you and Agnew during the ETA class taught me how to do diligence very well, because all the things that I liked about the business before I bought it, I still like about the business. And all the things that gave me an ulcer about the business before I bought it, they still give me an ulcer to this day. So I don't give myself a 10 out of 10, but I give myself a 9.5 out of 10. So I appreciate you and Agnew teaching me how to effectively look at the business. But two things happen. So one is that our business has commercial truck drivers. And particularly pre-COVID-19, hiring a commercial truck driver, CDL for short, it's difficult. There's a shortage of CDLs. So I was very diligent when I was looking at the business of understanding what the CDL plan was going to be, because there was only two CDLs for the business. And the owner was one of them. He wasn't going to stick around that long. So I was very diligent about making sure from a lifestyle standpoint that the one CDL that was there was not likely to leave. So I very detailed diligence that point. And I also made a plan of when I bought the business, how I was going to hire more CDLs to help de-risk that. On the day that the deal closed and I got to meet the employees for the first time, you'll never guess, O'Connor, what the CDL driver told me. I am moving to Florida. The old owner didn't know this. I did not know this. The first time I met him, he told me that he was quitting and he was likely going to leave in a couple of weeks. My heart sank to the floor. With that said, that accelerated our CDL hiring process. We now have a great CDL, Chris, on payroll that we brought on a couple weeks later. I also got my CDL, which I mainly did because I want, again, to be on the ground and, you know, show the team that I can do this. And that CDL ended up actually staying for a couple more months, and it was a, you know, good smooth transition getting him out of there. But again, best laid plans, right? And literally found that out the day that I bought the business. The second thing relates to the grease disposal. So in the grease business, it's a great business in a lot of ways. It's fragmented, it's recurring, it is typically regulation driven. Also with the grease business too, something a lot of people don't really appreciate about it is it provides a great career outlet for individuals that don't have a lot of social skills, because grease smells really bad. So if you're covered in grease all the time, nobody wants to talk to you. They'll actually proactively, you know, get away from you. So if you want a career where you don't have to deal with anybody, then grease trap pumping is fantastic. You can apply it at GiddingsHawkins.com. We're always looking for good drivers. But the real key to the business, though, is disposal. And we have a variety of disposal sites because I diligenced that point in great detail before I bought it. So I want to make sure that if one of our main sites goes offline, there's a place to take the grease. So a couple months into buying the business, our main disposal site had to go offline. They were discharging too much of a certain chemical into the Milwaukee sewers, and they were faced with a significant fine. And as part of their quote-unquote recovery plan, they had to go cold turkey on taking grease. But again, going back to the diligence, is that, you know, there was a lot of places we could take grease. So even though we lost our biggest one, the grease business is still doing fine. Although hopefully we don't lose any more, otherwise we'll be in an interesting situation. And to my point, while grease trap pumping is the biggest part of the business, it's one of five distinct business lines that we have. So even though grease is slowing down a bit because of disposal issues, we can lean more heavily on the other four.
Yeah, Reid, it's an interesting lesson on a couple of levels. You know, one, around manifestation of risk and how do you, you know, when something does rear its ugly head that you identified during diligence, how do you pivot? How do you adapt? because no business is perfect. No business is without risk. The other one is, you know, we spend a lot of time, I feel like, talking about customer concentration, right? It sounds like in this example that you just shared, it was really more about partner concentration or, some, you know, in a certain way, supplier concentration. Did you sort of know that going in, that you sort of had this partner or effectively this supplier that did represent risk? Or was that something that was just unidentified? You probably paid a lot of attention to, you know, the composition of your revenue and customer concentration, and you really had to adapt to that on the fly.
O'Connor, could I have gone through your class without overlooking something that big as a supplier concentration issue? I think you would have flunked me out or not let me be the TA if you thought that kind of behavior was becoming of one of your SDAs. No, I went so far as to actually meet this supplier before I closed the deal. It was part of the diligence process, and we talked about the partnership that we had with them. We talked about how it was going to continue with a new ownership group, and it was going to be business as usual. And to this day, we still have a great relationship. And the minute that, you know, they solve their issue, they're going to start taking our stuff again. The other dynamic too is that not only are they a supplier of ours, they're actually a customer of ours too. So when they have issues at their facility that require, you know, pumper trucks, we go out there and give them good service. So it's a very symbiotic relationship. It's just truly an unlucky outcome, I would call it.
A plus diligence effort, Reed. Fantastic. Yeah, I want to backtrack a little bit here before we come up on time and wrap up and talk about the way that you went about executing this acquisition and financing it. So I understand you used an SBA loan, part of the SBA 7A program. Can you tell us a little bit about, Reed, that as a financing avenue and your decision to go about making this acquisition in a self-funded way, meaning not raising capital ahead of the acquisition, so for a search effort, and then ultimately, as I understand it, not for the ultimate acquisition itself either. Can we just unpack that a little bit?
I am blessed that before business school, I owned a chain of Anytime Fitness clubs in Sacramento, and I sold all except one of them before business school, but I held on to one, which I've had now for 11 years. Unfortunately, it's been closed the last couple of months because of COVID-19. And that club has a manager, Gwen, who's run it on her own now for the better part of a decade. Gwen is fantastic. And what Gwen has done for me is that my entire time in business school and all the years afterwards is that fitness club has provided enough income where, granted, I can't, you know, afford to buy a nice house with it or anything, but it's provided enough income where I could pay the bills and I could self-fund my search so I didn't have to take any money during the search process. Now, it's also nice because lenders also like to look at the fact, hey, you know, this guy has, he has a good experience, he's owned businesses before, but B, he has long-standing stable revenue from an outside business as well. So it made me an attractive potential borrower as well. So end of the day, it's because of Gwen that I was able to do the self-funded route. And the way that I ended up closing the deal was with the SBA. I chose Chase as my lender. The way that I found Chase was interesting though. Again, I was talking about how my search was focused on fitness and franchising. That led me to look at buying some FedEx routes. And I was looking at buying FedEx routes. I was, again, working with a broker who claimed that he could work with some bankers out of Colorado. Now, understand that I'm in California at this time. I'm not looking at, you know, businesses in Colorado. But he said, I can get you a fixed rate SBA loan from Chase, from this group out of Colorado. Ended up diligencing that deal, making a relationship with the bankers, but not actually closing the deal. So then fast forward to, you know, 6 months when I find Giddings Hawkins, it's hard to find fixed rate SBA lenders, almost impossible to find fixed rate SBA lenders. So I reached out to these lenders that I was introduced to through the FedEx routes and said, hey, are you guys interested in looking at this deal? They said yes. And to this day, I'm still actually surprised that the deal with Chase got across the finish line with the kind of terms that I got. But sure enough, it happened. So my takeaway from the self-funded story, particularly about the FedEx routes and the lenders, is that you never know where certain things are going to take you. So just have an open mind, you know, strap in, wear your seatbelt, because oftentimes relationships and connections play out in very positive ways that you cannot always anticipate.
Reid, in what way are you operating the business differently as a result of 100% ownership and the fact that you didn't raise any outside capital and the fact that you have a personal guarantee very likely associated with that note that you took? How have all those things influenced the way that you think about operating your business, whether it be reinvestment of free cash flow or a holding period or just the way you build your team and your culture and your organization and way of doing things?
It's both a blessing and it's a curse. It's a blessing because at the end of the day, the only interest groups that I'm beholden to, which are always the two most important, are my customers and my team members. But in reality, I'm beholden to nobody else. It's a curse though, because I have full freedom. I really have freedom to be a dumbass sometimes, because I don't have a Brian O'Connor to tell me when I have some idea of, Reid, that is the worst idea I've ever heard. There is no way you should possibly do that. You know, like, did you even graduate from high school, let alone Booth, with an idea like that? So having full freedom is both a blessing, because obviously I can do what I want to. But also with that freedom comes a curse as well.
I highly doubt, Reid, that we'd ever have that conversation. But I appreciate the humility in you making that comment.
You're welcome.
So, Reid, I'd like to talk now and sort of wrap up just a few thoughts on your newly engaged. Congratulations. That's fantastic. You're a year into running a business. You're a competitive stair climber. You've got a lot going on. How do you make it all work? And what have been some of the challenges in the early days of your operating a business and in your soon to be marriage?
So I think that the key to making it all work and understand it is a daily struggle. I was telling somebody who was asking me recently about what the first year of owning the business was like. And I told them that, you know, I spent 50% of my time in the field, you know, really learning what it is that the technicians do. And I spent 50% of my time, you know, being the CEO, president, business owner, really running things. But I spent 100% of my time really having no idea what I was doing during year one. And then what's really changed in year two is now I spend less time in the field, you know, maybe only 5 or 10% per week. But that's really the only thing that has changed in year two. I still sometimes feel like I have no idea what I'm doing. With that being said, though, you fake it till you make it, right? And then going back to the first question that you asked is that I think the key is consistently prioritizing. What I tell myself, and it's always a struggle, what I tell myself is I need to be doing what is the most important thing right now consistently. If I find myself, and oftentimes that's the thing that I least want to be doing, but I judge the success of my days by how much of my day I spend doing exactly what I don't want to do. And if I'm lucky, I'm doing exactly what I don't want to do at the precise time that I don't want to be doing it. If I'm spending my day doing that, then I consider it to be a success.
Reid, that's such great advice. And, you know, I find it so interesting, all of the things that you've shared with us on this podcast today, but the way that you've figured out how to find balance and lead the organization that you're leading in the way that you want to lead it and lead your life in the way that you want to lead it. I think there's a lot of learning for our listeners in, you know, finding the right path, right? Your path is the one that's right for you. And I think that people will need to, you know, listen to this and find their own path and what works for them. We're just about up on time. Reid, any parting thoughts that you'd like to leave the listeners? Any final words of wisdom or cautionary tales that you can leave us with?
If I could, I want to make three shout outs. Shout out number one is to my awesome intern, Nishree. She is a first year of Booth right now, going into her second year. She is in Thailand right now. We talk 4 weekday mornings at 5 a.m. because that's 5 p.m. for her. I was talking earlier about how we're launching field service management and we're going paperless now. She has been integral in doing that, in both cleaning up our customer lists and setting up this field service management so it can be used by, you know, field employees. So I got to give a shout out to her. She has been nothing short of fantastic. Secondly, the Booth ETA community, certainly TAing the class with you and Agnew and the work that Alex Hodgkin does, that Nora and Megan do, and that Paul is doing now. I think the Booth ETA community is in a great place. And I think with the operator group, we're going to keep on growing it. And quite frankly, O'Connor, I am super excited to see where it is 5 years from now, even 10 years from now, knowing how far it's come in the last 5 years. And third, and this is most importantly, I got to give a shout out to Dave Newberry, my fellow TA from your class and one of my best friends as well. Without Dave, I can promise you I would never have closed the Giddings-Hawkins deal, because during diligence, looking at the business, even operating the business now, whenever I had issues, whenever, you know, I got an ulcer type of thing going on, I can always pick up the phone, call Dave, and he's there for me to help me and answer any questions that I have. So I really encourage everybody who's thinking about doing a search, who's in a search right now, or is even operating a company, to do your best to find your own Dave Newberry out there, because having a partner like that is a great way to go. So shout out to Dave Newberry.
I love that, Reed. And in your enthusiasm and appreciations and take on life is infectious. So I really thank you so much for taking the time and sharing all of this with the listeners. With that, Reed, we'll let you get back to running Giddings-Hawkins. Thank you for your investment of time and insight.
Thank you so much, O'Connor. Appreciate it.